The townhouse on Fifth Avenue had been dark for an hour. Pearl counted the windows from the street 7 across the facade, all of them black except the third-floor study, where a sliver of amber light still clung to the curtain edge. She'd watched it flicker and die at 9:30, when the last servant had blown out the candle in the hall. By 10, the house belonged to the night. She approached from the side, along the narrow service lane that ran between the townhouse and the neighboring building. The cobblestones were slick with November drizzle. Her boots made no sound. She'd learned that trick from her father, who taught her to walk like a shadow before she could read. The kitchen door was locked, not a deadbolt, a simple spring latch, the kind a tired cook might forget to throw. Pearl drew the key from her coat pocket, the one she'd taken from the machine shop on Orchard and Rivington. It was a different key than the one she'd filed down, a smaller thing, cut for a narrower pin-tumbler mechanism. The machinist who'd made it had been sloppy. The bow was asymmetrical, one side thicker than the other, but it worked. The latch clicked. The door opened. The kitchen smelled of cold ash and old grease. Pearl moved through it by memory and touch, her fingers along the wall, counting steps. 3 to the pantry, 5 to the back stairs. The wood groaned under her weight, a long metallic complaint that echoed up through the floorboards. She froze. Silence answered. The house had swallowed the sound hole. She climbed. The second floor was a maze of closed doors and hanging coats. Pearl tested each one bedroom, bath, storage end, found them all locked. The third floor was different. The hallway was open, lined with framed photographs, and a runner carpet worn thin at the edges. At the far end, the study door was ajar. A sliver of light. Pearl pressed her shoulder against the wood and pushed it wider. The room opened before her like a throat. It smelled of beeswax and expensive tobacco, the kind that cost more per pound than most workers earned in a week. The walls were lined with books she couldn't read, spines and languages she didn't recognize, gold lettering dull under the lamplight. A grand piano stood in the corner, its lid closed, and somewhere beyond the wall she heard it practicing scales again, a mechanical metronome ticking out a melody someone had composed to sound effortless. Pearl wasn't here for the piano. She was here for the desk. It dominated the far wall, a massive thing of dark walnut with drawers that opened and closed with a soft, oiled sigh. Pearl approached it slowly, her hand on the .32 in her coat pocket, 3 rounds. She'd loaded them herself, pressing each bullet home with a trembling thumb, counting to 3 between each one, 3 shots, 3 chances. She hoped she wouldn't need them. She expected she would. The desk was unlocked. Of course it was. Silas Vane didn't lock his desk. He didn't need to. The lock was a formality, a gesture toward security that cost less than the habit of trust. Pearl pulled open the top drawer, empty except for a silver paperweight shaped like an anchor and a stack of blank stationery. She closed it, opened the second. Files, dozens of them organized by date and project name. She flipped through them quickly, her fingers staining with ink and dust. Transit contracts, land acquisitions, labor disputes, all of it mundane, all of it expensive. Then she found it. A folder, thicker than the rest, labeled simply Railway Phase 2. She pulled it free and spread the contents across the desk surface. Blueprints. Dozens of them, rolled and unrolled, pinned and taped, a cascade of technical drawings that covered the walnut in a flood of ink and graphite. Pearl leaned close, squinting in the lamplight, and felt the air leave her lungs. These weren't the railway plans she'd seen posted at City Hall. These weren't the ones the workers had argued over at union meetings. These were something else entirely. Every third support column was marked with a red X, not a circle. An X, sharp, deliberate strokes, drawn in a hand that didn't tremble. The columns were spaced at regular intervals along the entire route from the Hudson terminus, up through Midtown, across the East River Bridge, all the way to the Queen's endpoint. Every third one. A pattern, a countdown. Pearl traced the lines with her fingertip, following the route, calculating. If the columns failed, the track would collapse, not a derailment, a collapse. Hundreds of tons of steel and stone falling onto whatever was below. She didn't want to think about what was below. She didn't need to. The scale of the drawing showed streets, buildings, a dense grid of human activity beneath the railway spine. Her hand shook. She pressed it flat against the desk to steady it. There was more. Beneath the blueprints, a second layer of documents, memoranda, correspondence, invoices. She flipped through them faster now, her breath coming short. An invoice from a foundry in Brooklyn. payment for reinforced iron supports dated 3 months ago. A memorandum from Vane's chief engineer, dated 2 weeks ago, noting that the third column specifications have been altered per directive. A letter, unsigned, addressed to Vane, reading simply, "The timing is set. Proceed." Pearl's mind raced, connecting dots she hadn't known existed. The key that didn't fit the factory lock, the machinist who'd been found drowned with that key sewn into his hem, the men in gray coats watching the tenements. Thomas Erickson hadn't met his end because of the mill's secrets. It was the railway he was silenced over. The columns. The X marks. And the key she'd filed down, the key that had led her to a defunct machine shop, it wasn't a factory key at all. It was a key to this room. To this desk. To the plans that proved Silas Vane was planning to destroy his own railway. Why? The answer was in the blueprints. Pearl spread them wider, laying them out like a map, and saw it then the hidden detail she'd missed on first glance. The support columns weren't just marked for failure. They were marked for controlled failure. The red X's were accompanied by smaller annotations, calculations of load distribution, stress points, failure cascades. This wasn't sabotage in the crude sense. This was engineering. Someone had designed a bridge to collapse in a specific direction, toward a specific target. Pearl's blood went cold. She traced the trajectory of the collapse on the drawing, following the red lines downward, and found it a cluster of buildings marked in a different ink, shaded in gray. A warehouse. A shipping office. A name she recognized. Casey and Son. The old dockyard operation her father had run before he died. Before Vane had bought the land, before Vane had bought everything. Before Vane had buried the deed and sold the property to the railway company at 3 times its value. The railway wasn't being sabotaged to hurt the workers. It was being sabotaged to destroy evidence. The warehouse held the records, the ledger, the proof of what Vane had done to her father. And when the railway collapsed, the warehouse would go with it, and the proof would burn, and Silas Vane would be clean. Pearl stared at the blueprint until the lamplight blurred. Her hands were shaking so badly she could barely hold the paper. She thought of Thomas Erickson, drowning in the East River, his trousers stitched shut with hand-sewn thread, 6 stitches on the right leg. She thought of Alina Rossi, sweeping the same patch of floor for the third time, her eyes darting toward the stairs. She thought of the men in gray coats, standing outside apartment 4, watching and waiting. They weren't watching Alina, they were watching Pearl. They'd known she was getting close, they'd known she'd come here tonight. A floorboard creaked behind her. Pearl spun, the .32 in her hand before she fully turned, her arm extending, her finger on the trigger guard. The hallway was empty, but the door, the study door, was closing. Slowly, deliberately, as if someone were pushing it from the other side. Pearl backed away from the desk, her eyes on the door, her body angled toward the window. The piano scales continued beyond the wall, steady and indifferent, as though the house itself didn't know what was happening inside it, or as though it knew and didn't care. The door stopped closing. It hung open an inch, a sliver of darkness where light should have been. Pearl didn't wait. She grabbed the blueprints, rolled them tight, and shoved them into her coat. The fabric bulged against her ribs, heavy and warm. She turned and ran for the window, throwing it open, the cold November air rushing in like a slap. She climbed onto the sill, looked down at the garden below 12 feet of wet grass and flower beds, and jumped. She hit the ground hard, her ankle twisting, pain shooting up her leg like a live wire. She rolled anyway, came up running, and disappeared into the alley between the townhouse and the neighbor's building, the blueprints pressed against her chest, the key burning in her pocket, and behind her, the study window opening, and a voice smooth, aristocratic, never raising volume calling out into the night. "Pearl, we can discuss this properly." She didn't look back, she ran. The blueprints were heavy against her ribs. Her ankle throbbed with every step. The alley opened onto a side street, and she spilled out onto the cobblestones, limping, breathless, the city swallowing her whole. She didn't stop until she reached the Bowery, until the smell of boiled cabbage and damp plaster replaced beeswax and tobacco, until her lungs stopped burning and her legs stopped shaking. She found a room above a saloon on Orchard Street, paid in advance with coins she'd taken from her father's old watch box, and collapsed onto the mattress. The blueprints lay spread across the floor beside her, still rolled, still marked with red X's. She stared at them until dawn, her hand resting on the .32, three rounds counting down, and thought about what she would do next. The piano scales had stopped. The house on Fifth Avenue was silent. And somewhere in that silence, Sila's vein was smiling because he knew something she didn't. He knew she was running out of time.